this is where Texas politics gets interesting. Here again are two guys named Jason, some great guests, and cold Texas beer for another smart conversation on Y'allitics, the unofficial political podcast of Texas.
Hey guys, we are in the Y'allitics penthouse for this.
Is that what
episode.
We call this thing now? I always called it a corner of the building in which we work all the time, but a dusty corner usually.
I was selling it a little more.
Okay.
You'll notice one thing here. Wheeler forgot to bring any drinks for us.
I didn't, actually. I have it by the side
Do
of
you?
My chair.
You have one for yourself?
I only think of myself.
Again, of course. So it's funny. We're recording this in the morning, almost lunchtime, mm-hmm. and I stopped by. I had a narrow window after I dropped my child off for school this morning to stop by a liquor store.
Okay.
So I get on Google Maps. I'm like looking for liquor stores.
I'm glad you got them to school on time before thinking of picking
up.
Well, you know,
when you start looking for liquor stores at like 7:30 in the morning,
it's not a good
sign.
It's a
problem. I found one.
Your ad choices are going to be really interesting for a while.
I found one that was open near the airport.
Okay. And did you get anything?
I walk in and I said, "Hey, I'm looking for a mocktail for our guest, and any fruit flavored beer." And she said, "Sir, we don't have any cocktails or mocktails, and we just have regular beer. That's what we're going to have to go without today."
Okay. Well, I'm fine with not drinking that. I have water here as well.
So you brought water strictly for yourself?
I brought water, and I brought a Tejano Picano from Oak Islands Brewery, which sounded interesting.
Nice.
It sounds like kind of probably a thicker, it's a brown ale with Texas pecans.
Mm. Wow.
It sounded good, but...
We should get a couple of cups.
It's probably right that I'm not having this at this hour. That's fine. Next time.
So our guest today is somebody we had on our political TV program called Inside Texas Politics. I was like, wow, this interview is so great. We need to have her back.
Because there's more to get to.
Have a podcast with her because it's fantastic. Just the subject matter, the people she's met, the people she knows, the things she does all the time. So our guest today is Erica Barrera. She is the president, CEO of Barrera Consulting. She is a Democratic fundraiser. And we had a state senator on a little earlier on our program today. And I said to the state senators, "Hey, do you know Erica Barrera?" He said, "Oh, yeah, of course."
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, "Well, I just met her."
You're known.
I just met her. So we're here to find out more about what you do. Thanks for coming back.
Of course. Happy to be here.
I know you're probably a little put off and you had to delay it for a day or two because of Wheeler's involvement in this, but still... we do appreciate that. So you guys got into it before we even hit the record button on this.
We did, which I typically
do. So go ahead
do.
And ask your questions because I'm like, dude, hold on till we actually start the podcast.
I'm not really asking questions so much as I'm re-asking questions. Now, I do this every time because I'm curious.
Yeah.
And
so what are you curious
and you
about
take
first?
A long time to set up, Whiteley. Took him like 10 minutes to put a microphone on. He couldn't figure out how to get her microphone on. I had to solve that, and I still had time to ask several questions. So, Erica, thank you so much for being here with us.
Of course.
First of all, I won't get into the re-ask yet. I just want to ask you, so you're a Democratic fundraiser. Some people also would call it a bundler. Is that right?
That's actually different.
Okay.
Bundlers are really donors who are bundling money for different campaigns.
I see. Okay.
I'm a consultant. I'm a consultant and donor advisor, so I'm actually giving advice to my clients about strategically investing in races across the country, whether they be federal, state, local races.
There's a real art to this.
Yeah.
And you threw out a fascinating statistic before we got started. I say you threw it out, I actually asked you a question. can you repeat, when we talk about people donating to political campaigns, it seems like we see these dollar figures that are just astronomical as we go from election to election now, and you think, man, everybody's pouring money in.
Right.
They're not.
Right. It's actually very interesting. I recently read 70% of Americans have never made a political contribution, which is insane to think about when
wow.
you do see that now we're really looking at billion-dollar races when you're looking at a presidential. But it actually makes sense, right? Because when you look at donors, it's actually two extremes. Mm-hmm. You have the millionaire, billionaire donors giving the high dollars, and then you have the grassroots small dollars. And those two extremes are actually what's fueling the majority of political contributions. Mm-hmm. So you're falling in one camp or the other.
So if let's take Wheeler's case, for example. if he has $10 million to put into, Democratic races today.
Like he should hire me first.
I like the sound of me having $10 million, first of all.
If he put you on the payroll, where would you tell him that he needs to put that money today, looking at the landscape we have today, 60 days out from the election, where should he put his money?
Well, I'm very much committed to the presidential, right, because it starts from the top, as we say. Whether you're looking at politics, business, it always starts from the top. So the presidential race is incredibly close. You'll see Vice President Harris always talk about Democrats, we're the underdog, and we have a lot of work to do. So number one, let's start at the very top. And then you look at the U.S. Senate. I mean, this is going to be razor thin when you look at Montana, John Tester, when you look at Jackie Rosen in Nevada. You look at Sherrod Brown in Ohio. Yeah. I mean, there is not a shortage of races to invest in, because this election, I think we are going to be up late on November 5th, if not.
You think so?
We may be going into November 6th.
Overtime.
I remember these things very clearly when Governor Warnock, right, got his race, won his race. It was actually... Senator. Warnock. Yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah. When he won his race, that was January 6th.
Because I remember
I was so tired from staying up looking at the vote totals. And I was like, am I seeing what I'm seeing after he won and being so elated that Senator Warnock, along with John Ossoff now, were the two Democratic senators from Georgia. But then that's obviously when the insurrection also happened. So those things are kind of seared in your memory.
That's like those races, as big as they were, almost got lost that day with the rest of the day's events.
But let me make sure I understand. So if Wheeler has this big chunk of change to spend, he wants to be influential in politics, he wants to invest it somewhere. He's in Dallas, Texas, let's say. You might tell him, listen, the best use of your money is going to be in Montana, Nevada, Pennsylvania, somewhere else. It's not going to be here in the state.
Look, I'm not saying don't invest where you live, because that's very important too. But when I'm looking at the grand scheme of things, you know, it takes a team to win. You can't just work in a silo just looking where you live. And I think that's also why you see people coming to Texas to raise money, because we have so many generous donors here in the state who are very influential, and people want their support, and they look to them. And that's why you'll continue to always see Texas being one of the top producing states for donors.
Political ATM.
Yeah, it has been called the political ATM a lot of times, and I think people tend to think of it as, you know, this big red state, this Republican-friendly state that's been led by Republicans for decades.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people might not, you know, consider the fact that Democrats, big-name Democrats, come here on the often to grab those dollars, because they are available here for Democrats as well.
Right. I think Texas, I've said it before, people automatically think California, New York, but Texas really is, not only because we have very generous donors here, but Texas has some of the most influential donors. We have an ambassador serving right now in Argentina, and that speaks to the volumes of the work that they're doing, not only raising money, but what they're doing for policy and being able to create those alliances. The administration looks at that and just sees that's a really good investment. That's a very good representation of America, and I want that Texan on my team.
And we know that there's a lot of these small dollar donors in Texas.
Absolutely.
A very large population
Here. Absolutely.
I think that there might be a misnomer out there that, you know, a lot of the big money in this state is, you know, oil and gas. Obviously, there's a lot of that.
Sure.
And that maybe all of that money just tends to go to Republican candidates. But you've got a lot of wealthy people in Texas who also donate to Democrats.
Absolutely. And I just think this specific election in 2024, it's been so extreme on the Republican side with former President Trump that people are saying, that's not me. And maybe are considering looking at the alternative of a Vice President Harris, or looking at an alternative of a Colin Allred, because I think people genuinely want to be happy and not be scared. And so you're looking at a difference of a joyful campaign versus a fearful one. And I think that's why you're seeing donors make different decisions in 2024.
Speaking of this election cycle, have you had any donors come to you or any of your clients who didn't always vote Democrat, who might want to get involved in the Democratic race this time?
Oh, I definitely see people coming off the sidelines, and I just, it makes me excited.
Are these Democrats who are coming off the sidelines, or are these people who voted?
Both.
Republicans? Coming
Republicans are coming off the sideline because they say, we're better than this. This is not representative of America,
and
of the America
these,
I love.
And you've
absolutely
had these clients.
They've had these clients. You know, and it's, and I just think it, again, is a testament to the Democratic message right now for the 2024 campaign, that it resonates with people. And it's not just about being one party or the other. Mm-hmm. It's about ideologically, America is the greatest place on earth. Mm-hmm. And I think one candidate, it resonates with me more with one candidate versus the other. And that's why I think you're seeing people come off the sidelines and saying, now's the time to get in. I don't want to go back to what things were like, you know, in 2016, in, you know, 2016 to 2020.
And the Harris-Walz campaign has crushed fundraising records.
Yeah.
and surprised and shocked everybody on both sides of the aisle, even the, you know, the moderates and the people who were on the sidelines. But when Kamala Harris or Governor Walz, who will be in Dallas on Monday, when they come to a fundraiser here, and they might have a couple of fundraisers. President Biden had one a few months ago, yeah. I believe, here, with two fundraisers. How much are they walking away with? How much is their campaign going to walk away with?
Oh, it's unprecedented.
$20, $30 million? I mean, how much? What's realistic?
In a night.
In a night, for one, like a visit to Dallas.
Well, one, when they're coming, they're usually doing a swing. It's not a single city. So when you brought up President Biden, when he came here in March, it was a Dallas-Houston swing. And so, yes, they're picking up several million in each of these cities. And again, you know, President Biden came right after State of the Union. And, you know, he'd hit it out of the ballpark. And I was fielding calls, six figures, Erica, can I give it? And absolutely. And it wasn't some marketing ploy. We were sold out. Like, we hit capacity. That's how enthusiastic people are, and also how important the times are. I think it speaks to why people are like, you know, I may not have had it budgeted, but it is that important that I'm going to do it. So, you know, Governor Walz will be here. He will walk away with several million because, again, people know the stakes of this 2024 election, and they say, now's the time to get in. I will say that, you know, it's after Labor Day, and you got to finish making all your buys. So before September 15th,
like, all your ad buys.
All your ad buys.
Commercials and things like that.
So September 15th is the
day. I really said, as a fundraiser, I'm like begging people, like, I know you want to give up until the election, but we got to be able to spend it. So I just highly encourage, that's why you're seeing Governor Walz here at the beginning of September, because in order to really put those dollars to use, you need to do that sooner than later, because it is now a mad dash until the end.
I have not thought about that September 15th deadline, or not deadline, but a threshold there. So you're trying to get in.
Amass as much money.
You need that before September 15th,
right,
so you can start laying it out.
Think about it. Think about it, Jason. Early voting starting across this country in certain states this month of September. Yeah. So we got to have people knocking the doors. We have to have people phone banking. You know, all of those things have to start happening now.
And they cost money.
So that's me saying, as a fundraiser, I love every dollar I get, but can you give it to me before September 15th?
Don't give it to me in the 11th hour there. So let me ask this. You said that, and I thought it was interesting, you said people are coming off the sidelines.
Yes.
And yes, that some of those people used to maybe trend to, you know, more
one
in
way,
the Republican,
yes,
direction. But you're also getting people on the Democratic side who are coming off the sidelines. Can you talk a little bit about the difference now that the Harris-Walz campaign has started versus when it was Biden-Harris? What are you seeing as far as the difference in enthusiasm from people who want to give after that torch was passed?
Yeah, in which, again, I will always say, you know, my hat's off to President Biden. It was the most selfless act that he made on July 21st.
You don't see them give up power usually.
You don't.
Like that.
When you have power, you usually don't give it up. But that speaks volume to his character and his legacy. And I just think he will go down as the most selfless and honorable presidents of all time. Having said that, I think the people that were really energized were that Gen Z, the Gen Z voters. I mean, you're seeing them so excited now, having Vice President Harris at the top of the ticket. I talked about this before. I also see this within the Black and Brown community, the AAPI community, just being so excited because it resonates with them with the representation aspect of, I see somebody that looks like me running for the highest office in the land, and now I know that's possible for me too. And so I just think between the youngest, you know, younger demographic and then the, you know, minority marginalized demographic, you're just seeing them see something that was maybe missing when President Biden was at the top of the ticket. But I also think he helped bring people on board and say, it's okay, I endorse, my vice president is ready on day one, and I want you to get behind her. And you didn't see not a moment of hesitation. Everybody rallied around her, including, you know, former Speaker Pelosi, Hakeem Jeffries, Majority Leader Schumer. It was not even a moment of hesitation. They said, that's our candidate.
Take us back to that weekend when President Biden dropped out. That was a I think decision made was Saturday night, and then Sunday morning is when the announcement was made.
Yeah.
What was it like for you?
Oh.
Did your phone light up? Did you were you getting text messages? What happened?
Immediately. I couldn't answer anybody because, you know, I got my start because of President Obama, and I have extreme loyalty to the people that got me where I am today. And it was really hard because I knew how tough of a decision that was for President Biden to make. And so I just needed a moment because I'm very grateful for the people that take the time to put their name on the ballot. And President Biden, you know, this man has been serving more years than he hasn't, right? Since, you know, late 20s. He wasn't even old enough, right? Remember when he first got elected to the U.S. Senate. And just his story of what he's gone through with, you know, losing his wife, losing his daughter. If you know this man's story, just the selfless act to continue to, you know, serve the country.
Did you see more donors reaching out to you after Harris was announced?
No, they were very excited because, remember, July 21st was a Sunday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure.
By that night, 44,000 black women had galvanized for a call.
A Zoom call.
And raised a lot of money.
Raised over $1.2 million, I think it was. And that's, you didn't have 24 hours. Remember, it was announced around 1:30-ish on that Sunday. Because originally I got the link and the call was supposed to start in, you know, early evening. It was so successful, they had to shut it down and send out a new link because it was 44,000 women, black women from across the country saying, we've got her back.
So and then you were on that call?
I didn't get on the call because I was busy fielding so many other things, but I was on originally when it crashed and we had to wait. But then I was busy raising money for Vice President Harris, sending out the link, and that's why she was able to raise so much. And then you saw maybe 48 hours later, black men, and then white dudes for Kamala, and it just continued and continued because that was the excitement. When you asked me about the transition of, you know, President Biden giving the baton to Vice President Harris, like, it was so well received, and I think it was just done so genuinely that people felt that and said, I'm in.
Mm-hmm. So you knew your phone was going to be blowing up.
Yeah.
And you knew you had work to do.
Oh, yeah. It never stops. And it's not going to stop until November 5th. That is how close this race is. And we have to just continue to be vigilant and raise every dollar, hopefully before September 15th, as much as possible. But it is just, it's a neck and neck race.
And what is this like for Democrats here in this state in particular? Because, you know, as we talked about, you know, Republicans have had unified control of statewide offices for decades here. And I'm curious, every year, every election, you come along and you still get these folks, you know, to donate to the candidates who you think that they should donate to. Is this a way that they, I mean, how do they not get discouraged, I guess is what I'm asking, these Democrats who are giving big dollars election cycle after election cycle, but they don't necessarily see the result here
in
Texas?
That's a great question. And the answer is, this is a marathon, not a sprint.
Hmm.
So look at Georgia, for example. We started with, you know, Senator Warnock and Senator Ossoff. Georgia was not always represented by two Democrats in the U.S. Senate.
Right.
but it was a marathon. And, you know, we have to say, again, hats off to Stacey Abrams, because they did the work to take those steps inch by inch to finally get Georgia. I mean, it is a true swing state, but to get it to the place it is today. So Texans are committed. They know it's not going to happen overnight.
Do you think they'll see it this election cycle?
I mean, look, I am always going to remain hopeful. That's what's so great about the Democratic Party. Like, we are hopeful. You know, President Obama inspired that with his message. We are a hopeful party. And so Colin Allred's doing the work. And before him, Beto was doing the work. And each cycle, we're seeing improvements. And eventually, yes, it will absolutely turn blue.
It was very close last time, and this time the polls lately have been showing this is a very tight race.
2-point race.
Are you getting a lot of interest from people who are specifically talking about that? I mean, I know that you've seen enthusiasm with the Harris-Walz campaign,
yes.
But are you hearing from donors who go, hey, I want to get into this race?
Jason, the day after Colin spoke at the DNC, raised over $1 million.
For his campaign?
For his campaign. You tell me that's not enthusiasm for his race here in Texas. That says we see an opportunity and we've got his back. So it's not just Texans that see that. People across the country, donors are investing in this race because this is an opportunity just like it is in Montana, just like it is in Ohio, just like it is in Pennsylvania. We have a real opportunity. The stakes couldn't be higher, and donors realize that.
Erica, tell us how you got into this, because you attended college in North Carolina.
I did.
Wanted to be a sports broadcaster.
I did.
Wow.
And here you are, you know, hanging out with Hakeem Jeffries, yeah. Governors, yeah. People like that. How did you get into the world of politics?
You know, I'll actually say it started in my upbringing, right?
Mm. How so?
Because my parents really valued political participation. Hmm. You don't see it as, you know, a little girl growing up in Arlington, Texas. But when you're going to vote in your local elections with your parents, when they're taking you to campaign rallies, when you're going to NAACP conventions, all of that impacted me without me even knowing, right? I did I went to Chapel Hill, thought I was going to be the next Pam Oliver on the sidelines doing sports, but, you know, I had to come to a decision when I was graduating from Chapel Hill, and there was this junior senator from Illinois named Barack Obama, and he was doing a campaign training program, and the two qualifications were that you were a minority and a college graduate. Hmm. So I graduated May 14th, 2006. I got the call from his office May 15th.
What'd your parents say? Because they just paid for 4 years of school, I guess.
And that was the response. Erica, we just played, and you're going to do what? But, you know, it's kind of worked out for me.
Well, it's clearly worked out, though. Yeah, yeah.
Have you done the I told you so yet?
Yeah.
You know, taking her to the White House for the Christmas party with the Obamas, it wasn't too bad all. Like, it was okay.
That's good.
But, you know, I never thought, and that's what I always want to tell young people. You know, you can have an idea of what may be your future, but never sell yourself short. And it was a leap of faith, I will say, to fly to D.C. with 19 others and go through this campaign training program, and then to move to Iowa, which I had never been to.
Wow.
Lived in Waterloo, Iowa. But, you
wow.
know, it has been a very unique story. And again, only in America are these things possible. And I have to, you know, thank my parents for instilling that in me from an early age.
That's how you got started. How do you keep going in this? This is a tough business.
Yeah.
And I would imagine that there have been tough losses along the way of candidates who you really wanted to get in there.
Very much so.
Do you ever just want to stop?
No. I don't have that luxury. And I am so grateful for the losses, because it inspires me to keep going.
Hmm.
So no, I don't, you know, are there hard days? Well, of course, but it's all the people I meet. I mean, I literally have donors in every state of this country. Hmm. And when I'm now going to weddings of donors' kids, like, that's how long I've been doing this. And that also speaks of, this isn't just about money. This is about relationships. I mean, yes, I'm using the word donors, but these people have become like family over the years because I understand the sacrifice they're making. They may not go to, you know, on a vacation because they say, you know what, we're going to put that money towards a campaign. And so I don't take it for granted, the sacrifice they're making. So can I make a sacrifice of continuing to raise money, crisscrossing the country to do it? Absolutely.
So your clients aren't always high dollar clients.
No.
Like Wheeler, who would fly around in his in his Gulfstream. See, you have some though that are in your phone that would sacrifice a vacation to put that money towards a campaign.
That's how committed people are. They understand the stakes. You know, one of my newest clients, she talks about the reason she finally decided to get a donor advisor like me is for her grandchildren. Hmm. You know, the Roe decision being overturned really impacted, and you know, she has granddaughters, and you know, they're making decisions about where to go to college now based upon if God forbid something happened. Hmm. You know,
wow.
What are the laws in that state? And so you see people being inspired for different reasons and at different points of their life about why to get involved politically. But look, there's not a shortage of work for me to do. We started by saying 70% of Americans have never made a political contribution. So I still have a lot of people to continue to inspire and get them on board, whether it's a dollar, $5, anybody can do it. That's the greatest thing about making a donation. It can be any size.
A lot of those are younger people too. And I know that you'd spoken with Whiteley about this before. Those Gen Z voters, mm-hmm. I mean, they have the ability to cast a vote. They also have an ability to give money. And basically, you know, your message to them is, you think you don't have money.
Right, but you do.
You're spending money on
Starbucks, whatever it is. You know, I've used the example of, you know, I know there are Swifties out there. I know the Beehive is out there. If you can, you know, go to a concert, if you can get your cup of coffee, I'm more than happy to take that same amount of money for your candidate of choice because it is your future. I want people to think about political giving the same way they do about putting away money for college, putting away money for retirement. This is your future. If you care about your health care, if you care about education, if you know care about Social Security, all these things that are going to impact you, that is the sole reason you should take time to give whatever amount you can to these candidates.
Has anybody ever reached out to you? I mean, you've dealt with a lot of zeros over the years.
Yeah.
Has anybody ever reached out to you and thrown out a figure that just made your jaw drop?
I've seen several zeros. It's been very nice.
What was the biggest figure?
It was several zeros. It was very nice. You know, and that's great. I want to say thank you to that person, but I want to also say thank you to the 18-year-old that, you know, not only registered to vote, but made their first political donation. One is not more important than the other. Both are necessary to fuel a campaign.
And relatively speaking, it might be more of a hit to that 18-year-old's
Absolutely.
Bottom line than it was to the
Absolutely.
Other person. How much do you worry about vetting with donors? Do you have to get involved in that? Because, you know, if you're kind of a conduit or you're helping
Yes.
to push money in certain places, you don't want the candidate to later find out that donor's money was kind of dirty or whatever, or that donor's got some issues
Sure.
because then it, you know, affects the campaign.
Sure.
Is that tough?
Yeah, it is a process. Like, a campaign is a business, and we have all these different components of it. So, yes, vetting donors is one part of it.
So you take someone's money, and who do you call at the campaigns? Clearly, you have your own contacts, but is it the treasurer for the campaign? Or is it different committees with the campaign? Or who is it that you actually reach out to?
When I'm calling for what?
When you say, I have a donor here that wants to give X amount of money to Sherrod Brown, let's say in Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
Who do you reach out to in Sherrod Brown's campaign? One of your contacts
treasurer? So this is the great thing for doing it for as long as I have been.
You know the people then, right?
I know the people. And so every campaign has a fundraising team.
Yeah.
So I usually know the consultants. And in this political world, as in the world in general, there's usually 2 degrees of separation. If I don't know you directly, I know how to get
somebody,
to you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
How's the economy going? I mean, it seems like you'd be able to judge how the economy is doing by what it's like in this cycle.
Oh, that's true.
Does that kind of correlate?
Oh, that's definitely true. When people are having a hard time, it's not as easy to give those contributions. But again, people are sacrificing. to make those donations to the campaigns.
Do you ever have a campaign or a candidate call you and say, "Hey, I haven't heard from you in a while. Where are my people?
Where's my money?
And I mean, do you ever have that happen? And if so, what do you tell them?
I'm not going to say. People usually hear from me often. Mm-hmm. You know, they see me coming and are.
But they want to see you coming, right?
Well, it depends who you are. You know, Erica, you know, I just gave you a check last week. But, you know, with campaigns, yes, I'm in constant contact with them, especially right now, because this is crunch time. But I'm always happy to hear from anybody, whether it's a donor or a campaign, because that's what I'm here to do, right? Yeah. I'm here to raise money. I'm here to make things happen.
My last thing I would ask you is, can you talk about the, I mean, I think we all know that, you know, elections and campaigns, they run on money.
Yes.
How important is money in these campaigns, and also the limits of money? It can't do everything for you.
Oh, no, and that's definitely true. You know, when you talk about limits, I actually thought you were going to go in a different direction, just because in my years of being a fundraiser, right, there were limits, and then Citizens United happened in 2010. That's actually where I thought you were going with the question.
No, that's a good well to go down as well here. You know?
That's a better question probably, Erica, anyway, so I'm sorry you had to rescue
probably,
him, but go ahead.
Give
us the better answer to the better question.
I need people like
that you propose
better
yourself.
Questions for me.
Yes. You know, I'm quick on my feet.
Ask an answer right here.
But, you know, honestly, the answer I do want to give is that money is very important, but the candidates are more important. Hmm. I'm able to raise money because I have great candidates. And so I always say, give me a great candidate, I can raise him or her money. Hmm. And I am seeing that in 2024 with the Democrats. Like, I have great candidates. It has not been an issue whatsoever being able to raise money. And that's why, you know, I'm looking forward to November 5th.
So my last question is something I ask everybody, usually after the cameras stop rolling or the microphones are turned off, and that is election night. What will you be watching specifically?
Well, my wheelhouse really is the presidential and the U.S. Senate.
Are you watching the Pennsylvania race or the Georgia race for president?
I'm watching all of them. Like, yeah. You have to be able to do, you know, more than one thing at a time. So I'm going to be watching all of them. And how things are trending with the presidential will also be an indication of how things are trending with the U.S. Senate. Look, it is razor thin in the U.S. House. Like, I hope that we're going to elect a Speaker Jeffries by winning back the House and getting the 218 votes. But I'm going to be watching it all, and especially here in Texas. I mean, we have some very important races, so I'm going to be tuned in and just just diving in about where this country wants to go for the next 2 years, 4 years, depending what race we're looking at. And I'm very hopeful about what it's going to look like that night.
I know that you originally wanted to be a sports reporter. There's a lot of that in this. You know, there's scores to be kept.
Team sports.
There's teams here. Yeah. There's star players.
I always tell people politics is a sport.
It is.
100%. It is a sport.
Blood sport in some cases. Yeah.
Right. I'm excited about Thursday night football tonight, but I'm more excited about November 5th.
Well, thank you for being so generous with your time here, because I wonder, you know, what your phone has done just in this time here. I mean, it just sounds like this is always going.
Where is your phone, by the way?
Behind me.
No. I'll check and see who texted you since we started the podcast here. Check and see who it was.
Jeez.
Erica Barrera from Barrera Consulting, thank you so much for opening pulling the curtain back and showing us kind of what goes on behind the scenes here, because we haven't talked to anybody on either side.
I'll be honest with you. Before this, I had heard of bundlers before. I hadn't really thought of donation consultants. Like, I didn't.
There's an education, you know, to be had. And that's my job, is not only raising the money, but also educating people that you too can be involved. So many times I say we got to do a better job of creating a culture of giving, right? We're told register to vote. We're told, you know, to go volunteer. But I don't think as much emphasis is put on, but also make sure that you're financially supporting your candidate of choice.
Yeah, I've always thought about people giving the money, but not necessarily somebody directing them and going, hey, if you want that $100 or that $100,000 to go really far, here's how we should divvy it up and where we should send
it.
Just never really put those pieces together.
So that's why you call me.
That's why you're here.
and next time we'll have you bring your questions too, since Wheeler clearly wasn't prepared for that.
If you do, I will bring beers for everyone and a mocktail.
Love it.
Erica, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hey, y'all. Want to see the Jasons Talk Politics? Download the WFAA Plus streaming app for your smart TV and watch the latest episode of Y'all-itics each Wednesday night at 8:30.